I think what we've learned is that Idaho doesn't look the same. It doesn't look the same across the state, and it doesn't look the same across public health districts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Vandal Theory, a podcast about science and research at the University of Idaho. I'm your host for the day, Kyle Fawnensteel, Media Relations Manager here at U of I. I'm joined by my co-host and longtime podcast host, Lee Cooper.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lee Cooper, science writer and editor here at U of I.
Thanks for coming on the show again, Lee.
Oh, absolutely.
As a former rural healthcare reporter, I'm really excited for today's topic. We're going to talk about how to track health trends in Idaho. I know that sounds a little bit in the weeds, but to kick us off, Lee, I have a question for you. Can you name all the counties in your public health district?
Oh my gosh, no. Absolutely not. I don't even know. How many health districts are there in Idaho? Six or seven?
There are seven, and I only know that because I had to cover them.
Yeah, I think the only reason that I happened to know that was because U of I did a little bit of, you know, COVID coverage and helping out the state as well. And so it made it into, you know, some of the press releases and stuff that I was editing. So I think that's the only reason I would have had any clue that it was around that.
It should be easier for me living in Central District Health, where there are only four counties, but I can only really remember Ada and Boise offhand in my district. Health districts can be quite large in Idaho. It turns out that looking at problems at that level, like the spread of COVID or other disease rates, might paint a different picture than when you zoom in more locally. Our guests today know that well. Helen Brown is Clinical Associate Professor of Public Health, Exercise, Sport, and Health Sciences at University of Idaho. And Eric Seaman is a research scientist specializing in geospatial modeling at the Institute for Modeling, Collaboration, and Innovation, also known as IMSI. These researchers are helping model public health data on a county level, zooming in to find differences at a local level to help guide how money is allocated to at-risk populations in Idaho. Today, they'll talk about why it's important to understand these issues and how they drill down on them without fielding new surveys. Well, hello, y'all. Thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, great to be here.
Hi, I'm Helen Brown. I'm a clinical associate faculty in movement sciences, and I've been at the University of Idaho about 15 years. And prior to that, I worked as a public health practitioner in many diverse settings, and I'm happy to be speaking with you today.
Yeah, and I'm Eric Seaman. I'm a research scientist at the University of Idaho's Institute for Modeling, Collaboration, and Innovation. And my background is in climatology and mathematical modeling, and I'm really happy to be here.
So today, we're here to talk about your research to create more local information about public health data across Idaho. To start, can you tell us how your research helps us better understand the health of Idahoans?
Overall, health surveillance data, so data about disease conditions and health behaviors and attitudes, is sparse. It's sparse for most states outside of the required reportable diseases. And oftentimes, this data is only available at a state level, and in some cases, as true for Idaho, at a regional level. We have public health districts. And many years ago, working alongside state partners on obesity prevention efforts, I quickly realized that the paucity of data made it very difficult to identify populations experiencing greater risk for particular health conditions. As a public health practitioner, I knew what data we needed to take strategic action, but I did not know how to obtain and to analyze that data. And I was very fortunate to be introduced to the IMCI, Institute for Modeling, Collaboration, and Innovation, and the director, Holly Wickman, to begin working collaboratively with modelers who knew how to do this work of small area estimation. So we've been working on projects like this, starting first, piloting it with obesity and diabetes, and then moving into other areas that we'll be talking about today. And how does this help better understand the health of Idahoans? We've never had county-level data before that public health agencies and health systems and community partners could have a better idea of the particular health conditions in their local areas, and that they could take action, strategic action, to ameliorate health problems. The other interesting thing I'd like to add is that aside from the modeling, which produces results that we can give to our state partners. We've also created interactive county level maps that you can find in modelingidahohealth.org. So anyone can access these maps of the health conditions that we've already modeled to see what is the prevalence of these conditions in their counties, and comparisons are made between counties so they can understand their ranking of where they stand compared to other counties. And I think it's really providing insight into some of the most critical health issues for particular counties in Idaho.
Why is it important to measure some of these key drivers of health that your project tracks?
So as you can imagine, the understanding these particular factors that are associated with different health outcomes are very important. An example might be age or education, income is another one. So understanding those relationships in terms of particular health outcomes like obesity, hypertension, is very important for us to get an assessment or an understanding of how the population may be varying and what those relationships are to those health outcomes. Our work specifically attempts to examine these relationships, the relationships between particular demographic variables and health outcomes, and how we can utilize those relationships to provide better information to health practitioners and policymakers who may have minimum funds to address these kinds of issues. So having these kinds of robust understandings of these particular health conditions and behaviors at very refined spatial scales at a county level can give these decision makers good tools for understanding how they direct services in an efficient manner.
And if I could add, it's not enough to just look at health conditions. We also have to think about the social determinants of health. So thinking about economic factors, education, transportation, housing, and the interactive mapping that we're doing is allows us to do that, to see where we have, particularly an example is areas we have high prevalence of diabetes, and we also have high percent of households that have limited English speaking. It offers public health practitioners and health systems the information that they need to better serve and reach their clients and their patients. Another point I'd like to add about the importance of this: when it comes to funding, most of the funding for these health conditions that takes place in Idaho come from federal funding, from the CDC primarily. And the CDC requires that you have robust data if you want to make a case for the need for the federal funds, and also if you want to evaluate the success of your projects. And in the past, we just haven't had the data to make a compelling case, because overall, Idaho looks like a rather healthy state. But when you drill down deeper, and at a more micro level that we're doing, you see that there are great health disparities and health inequities within our state that need to be addressed. And this project has allowed us to demonstrate that, and it can increase, we believe, the competitiveness for grant funding for our state.
What have you learned throughout this work, and who can use this data and how?
Well, I'll start by saying I think what we've learned is that Idaho doesn't look the same. It doesn't look the same across the state, and it doesn't look the same across public health districts. And before, and Eric will talk about the data set that we're using to do this work, but before, what we could know about Idaho was by the public health district, and even the public health districts look very similar to one another. But now that we have data at a county level, we'll see that now we're able to see it, that there's variation between the counties within a public health district, and there's greater variation, and some public health districts have more variation within themselves. And that just wasn't possible before. And I think that gives everyone great insight into where there are critical areas in their public health district that there more attention is needed.
One point I would add that I think reemphasizes what Helen is talking about is that, as she was mentioning, that the issue of variability within a health district region is considerable. And when the state is looking at a particular area in terms of funding for health outcomes, being able to understand what those fine spatial variabilities are is important, particularly in a state like Idaho, which may have limited funding. So if a particular health outcome has and only certain amount of money to be distributed, it's important to be able to effectively distribute that funding in the most effective way possible. And having access to information at refined spatial scales, at a county level, as opposed to a regional level, provides greater information for those decision makers to more effectively allocate funds that best support Idaho's health.
One example of that was I was contacted by a former student who's working in a couple counties in southern Idaho, and she was going before a board of commissioners asking for support for a clinic. Didn't know where she could find the data, knew that she needed data, and I said, I can help you, because we had it. And that was just really fulfilling to know that we were able to provide substantial support for very important work that needed to be done in these two particular counties.
That's interesting. Could you walk us through an example of how your data showed something new in an area of Idaho?
Was in this particular public health district, there were counties that had higher or lower rates of diabetes and higher and lower rates of limited English-speaking households. And so it became more clear that there were certain populations in that health district that were at greater need. Data about having or not having insurance. And so when we can see relationships between high risk of disease, lower access to insurance, on compounding that, like limited English speaking, we realized we have populations of great need, and now we can really shine a light on those populations and not just notice that they're there, but to really have compelling evidence for need for support.
So why is it even important to have this localized information?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Kind of from a broad perspective, I think that it goes without saying that evaluating Idaho's health outcomes depends heavily on us understanding the current health perspective, and that is oftentimes acquired through surveys. Our work uses the CDC's, the Center for Disease Control's, Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, oftentimes referred to as BRFSS, which is a set of health-related telephone surveys that is used to collect state data about health-related behaviors, chronic health conditions, and other types of preventative services. So a key aspect regarding Idaho is that, as we've kind of alluded, that this data is collected at a regional scale, which is typically multiple counties. Our work is applying some statistical techniques called spatial microsimulation that allows us to estimate these survey responses, again, that were collected at a regional scale, at these more refined county level views. And as you can imagine, being able to understand these health behaviors at these county levels, as opposed to the coarser regional scale, is very important for public health practitioners and policymakers, or essentially anybody that's trying to effectively provide health services. And as Helen had mentioned, for example, we may have a value of obesity in a region that is just one perspective of obesity for the entire area, but that may not necessarily provide the variability that we may be seeing, where one county may be extremely high in obesity and another county is very low. So understanding and applying these kind of techniques allows us to get at these refined spatial scales, which ultimately results in providing better and more efficient services where they are needed.
Competing for a very, very competitive CDC grant for activity and nutrition. And they're asked, do you have counties with 35% obesity? I mean, what does it look like for your county? And that's an important part of this grant application, to be able to say, we do have variability, we have areas of higher risk. And without this work, they wouldn't be able to answer that question. And so I feel really great about that. I feel that we can, as I said before, be competitive for grants, but we can also, the most important thing is that we can identify and serve populations that are at highest risk for poor quality of life and chronic conditions.
It sounds like it's really critical to measure this at a local scale to understand how problems are actually affecting communities, as opposed to looking zoomed out. Eric, what did you bring to this project that was unique?
Yeah, as I had mentioned, my background is in spatiotemporal modeling. So modeling outcomes that may vary across geography or across time. So the health needs that we're talking about have close associations with those aspects of space and time, that if we look at aspects of obesity or diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, et cetera, that we know that those types of variables vary geographically and they vary over time. And that variability, it may differ for some particular types of health outcomes as opposed to others. So understanding that type of variability and how it may be occurring, again, across geography and time, is really important for policymakers and decision makers in the health arena so they can more effectively provide the appropriate responses to address those types of issues. So what I think I bring to the table in this respect is trying to develop unique modeling techniques that allow us to accurately estimate what these values are at these refined spatial scales. Because if we have a good understanding of that, that ends up translating into good data that, again, the decision makers can then use to make effective decisions across the state of Idaho.
It sounds like you're giving policymakers actionable, specific data through this work. How would their decisions differ if they were still only using the previously available data?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. As you can imagine, if we were looking at a larger regional scale and we just had a single value to provide a perspective on what a particular health outcome would be, that is just one number that is being applied to a wide swath of individuals across a large region and across differing distributions of age or sex, race, etc. So naturally, if we can provide more refined estimates for particular health outcomes geographically or across other types of demographic distributions, that's just more information that a policymaker can use to then say that County X may have a higher rate of hypertension and obesity, while County Y has higher rates of depression or other factors. Let's appropriately allocate funds in a manner that can address those issues in the most effective way possible. And if we only have a limited bucket of money, we want to use that money, and again, as an efficient way as possible. So having this type of information at these refined spatial scales gives, again, the policymakers the ability to best allocate the funds. And that translates to, in our eyes, a better allocation of services which reaches Idahoans in the most effective way possible.
I agree with what Eric has to say about that. And there's different levels of this. So from a state perspective, it offers the needed for funding. So that's very important. As I said earlier, so much of the work that gets done in Idaho comes from grant-based funding that's federal in nature, not all, but most. And secondly, what happens from the state perspective is our public health districts operate quite autonomously. They're governed autonomously. And so when the state is actually making an award to the public health district and for the sort of boots on the ground work, this can help that public health district identify which of the counties, of the five or six counties within their region, they should be to focus on, because they never have enough dollars to really cover the whole region. And I'll give you an example of that. For instance, control money, one key scope of work might be to work on cessation in a particular area or to do whatever the tobacco topic is, but they're supposed to just identify a county to do that work. Well, prior to we've done, they've not known the difference with the tobacco usage rates by counties. They've not known that. So they might have selected one on the best information that they had, but we feel like now they have better, more refined information to make some very strategic decisions about where they will have local action. So there's policy level at the state, there's policy work at the state level, but at the local level, it's really talking about what the work on the ground is, and it can guide the work on the ground that's done every day by public health partners. And I think we all know that public health workforce is understaffed and under-resourced. And so getting the work to being just work possible is really important. Out about that is we know COVID, it's often called the great revealer. And what COVID really revealed to us is that we have grave health inequities in the United States. So people underrepresented were dying at higher rates, hospitalized at higher rates, and were suffering from chronic diseases, pre-existing conditions at higher rates. And that became very, very clear with COVID-19. And now we realize that when we map this at a county level, we are seeing it. We're seeing the underrepresented, the differences in diseases in groups more clearly. And also, there is a rural-urban difference. So we're seeing more disease in rural areas. And so it's not always that the representation of different diseases is race and ethnicity. It's not. It can also be by age, and it can be by rural and urban dwelling status. And so this work for me is about addressing health inequity and deciding how do we do best information possible that we can see what the issues are and then we can address them.
Looks like it's almost time to wrap up. This project has been part of your ongoing work to model healthcare data in Idaho. Can you tell us about some of your past research and your future goals?
I'm grateful that I met people in IMCI. So grateful for that opportunity to get some funding that helped secure modeling time. I worked with a modeler before Eric, but Eric and I have had the longest period of time. I started out working, as I said, think data that we had around obesity prevention and what we could know and what we could do. And I quickly realized that we didn't have the data we needed. So we didn't have the data we needed to identify what was going on, but we also didn't have the data we needed to know we made any difference, because evaluation is a very important part of public health. You need to see, you figure out you identify what the issue is, you implement evidence-based practices, you evaluate to see if they work, and then you scale up. That's the public health model. But I knew we couldn't do that. And then I met people in our statistics department who had some sense of what modeling was, that introduced me to people at the IMCI, and we started a pilot of one of these BERFIS indicators to see what could we learn and what could we do. And that person that I worked with moved on, and then I still had this pressing need to understand this data at a local spatial level. And then I was introduced to Eric, and Eric and I have been working since on that. And then we've been fortunately really successful. We've been able to be funded by BERFIS work, and then we applied and received money to work in this COVID-19 work, where we were modeling health conditions that put people at risk for severe COVID disease, which means hospitalization, ventilation, ICU, and death. But our part two on that. And then we're also doing the same with the tobacco program in Idaho. And it's interesting because it's not just about using tobacco. It's about the factors that are related to tobacco use. So having adverse childhood experiences or having mental health or stress disorders. So we're getting into this territory where we're modeling all predictors of disease. And we just hope that we can expand it and keep going. And there's a lot of interest at the state to do this. And Eric's come up with the model to do it, and we're excited about where it could lead us. And also, what I also want to add is what's been really important for me is this interdisciplinary work. So meeting people that can do something that I don't know how to do. I had a vision for what I hoped could happen and what I knew we needed, but I didn't know how to get there. So this work has also been important for me just to be learning. I mean, I'm always asking Eric, tell me again, how does this work? Because it's not what I know how to do. And I've learned a lot from him. And I think we both have come away from this project better informed and excited about the work that we're doing and bringing other people in, people with GIS capability. We'd see a lot of opportunity for this work in the future.
Yeah, and I would just add to that I've really enjoyed working with Helen. I think we make a great team. We have been working on this for a number of years, as Helen had mentioned, with grant funding through the state of Idaho's Department of Health and Welfare that is funded via the CDC. We've worked on projects that are associated with obesity and diabetes. We've been funded for, as Helen had mentioned, tobacco cessation. And then we've had a couple rounds of funding for COVID-19. And we're currently in the process of a second round with COVID funding to explore these relationships of health outcomes to things like COVID deaths and hospitalizations. But we're applying this spatial microsimulation techniques of downscaling data to a county level to see if we can see what are the interactions between these types of health outcomes and COVID parameters. And then in addition to that, we're looking at the reverse. We're looking to see if the issues of COVID deaths or hospitalizations may have effects on health outcomes, which may be associated with things like long COVID. So that has been really great. And I think we make a great team on working on these kinds of health equity issues and bridging the gap between the social sciences with more quantitative computational modeling.
To the future, because BRFIS is the survey, there are core questions that remain the same, but there are questions that are added depending on the circumstances. So in 2022, there are questions about long COVID, people, if they've had COVID, what kind of impacts they've had from COVID. And so we're hoping that we're funded for a third round where we can actually start to explore that will really help us understand the link between COVID and these health conditions that we've modeled. So there's just so many things that we are learning and doing. And I also want to make sure that people know that they can see our work on modelingidahohealth.org and that we're creating interactive platforms where people can query and find out the data that they need for their county. And we have a lot of ideas about how to marry this data, these different data sets together, and to learn even more.
Thanks so much for sharing your time with us today.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
So, Lee, what did you think?
I mean, that was really interesting, especially considering we have just gone through a pandemic, so I think everybody has spent a good amount of time thinking about health and health in government and all that. I think the thing that really hit home, or that I was, focused on, was, I mean, you see data and graphs all over the place, in the news, on social, just all over the place. And, this was just such a good reminder that, it's wonderful to have access to so much data, that so much data is being taken. But if you don't have an expert looking at that data and interpreting that data means nothing. Having the data say that Idaho's generally not too unhealthy, I mean, that's great. But as they said, there are pockets of places that really need some help. Especially with, certain types of illnesses or diseases or whatever. And by not having experts take a look at the data, we are limiting ourselves. So it's always, just so important to remember that you need the experts to interpret the data for you.
What I'm taking away from this interview is a reminder to elaborate upon that measure twice, cut once expression. You have to really know what you're actually trying to measure before doing anything. Well, thanks, Lee. And thank you all for listening to The Vandal Theory. You can visit us at our website at uidaho.edu/vandaltheory to learn more about our research. Email us at vandaltheory@uidaho.edu. We are on all the podcast platforms. Please rate, review, and subscribe. I'm Kyle Fonensteel.
I'm Lee Cooper.
Thanks for listening.